good afternoon. You're listening to KMXT 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. I'll jump right into the weather. It is fair 48 degrees Fahrenheit today here in Kodiak. If you get the opportunity to go outside, seize that opportunity. It is quite lovely out. For today, sunny with a high near 47, a northwest wind around 10 miles per hour with gusts as high as 20 miles per hour. For tonight, mostly clear with a low around 37, a north wind around 5 miles per hour becoming calm. For Saturday, a 30% chance of rain after 4 p.m., increasing clouds with a high near 46. Calm wind becoming south around 5 miles per hour in the afternoon. For Saturday night, rain mainly after 10 p.m., low around 39, a southeast wind around 15 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 20 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 80%. For Sunday, rain with a high near 44, a northeast wind around 15 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 20 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 80%. And for Sunday night, rain, low around 40, east wind of 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts as high as 25 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 90%. So it looks like the good weather today is an isolated event. And coming into the next week, Monday, a rain with high near 42, chance of precipitation at 80%. And for Monday night, rain likely, cloudy with low around 37.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. As of next Tuesday, the United States will restrict travel from India, where new coronavirus caseloads and deaths have risen to record levels and more potentially deadlier variants of the virus are emerging. An administration official says American travelers returning from the South Asian country will be required to test negative before travel, quarantine upon arrival if they're not yet inoculated against COVID-19, and retest negative again. President Biden's taken his ambitious vision to upgrade the nation's infrastructure back on the road. The latest stop, Philadelphia, timed to help celebrate the 50th anniversary of Amtrak, which he traveled for decades between his Delaware home and D.C. when he was in the Senate. Today, he noted Amtrak's newest Acela trains were made in America. Biden says he wants to see more of that.
Investments in my American jobs plan are guided by one principle, buy American.
But Biden faces the difficult task of securing bipartisan support in Congress for an infrastructure plan that'll cost more than $2 trillion. Secretary of State Antony Blinken sets off next week to attend the Group of Seven meeting in London and then stop for a visit to Ukraine. And NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports that the U.S. has been raising concerns about Russia's ongoing aggression there.
Secretary Blinken plans to meet with Ukraine's president and foreign minister to, in the words of the State Department, reaffirm unwavering U.S. support for Ukraine's sovereignty. He will also encourage anti-corruption measures. Just this week, State Department spokesperson Ned Price criticized a cabinet decision to shake up the management of Ukraine's leading energy company, ousting well-regarded experts.
These actions are just the latest example of ignoring best practices and putting Ukraine's hard-fought economic progress at risk.
Blinken will visit Kyiv just after attending the Group of Seven foreign ministers meeting in London. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Washington.
Harvey Weinstein is facing extradition to Los Angeles. Weinstein is accused of 11 felony counts in California, including rape. The disgraced movie mogul is currently serving a 23-year sentence for sex crimes in New York. NPR's Elizabeth Blair has the latest.
Sitting at a table in a bleak room at Wendy Correctional Facility outside Buffalo, Weinstein said little while lawyers quibbled over paperwork and procedure. Weinstein's attorney, Norman Effman, has been challenging the extradition, including making the argument Weinstein should not be moved because he's in poor health. Effman will continue his challenges, but if they don't work, or if New York Governor Andrew Cuomo doesn't step in, Weinstein will be transferred to Los Angeles in 30 days, or May 30th. Last year, a New York jury convicted Weinstein of rape and sexual abuse after six women testified that he sexually assaulted them. Elizabeth Blair, NPR News.
The Dow's closed down 185 points. This is NPR News.
Last month, House District 38 Representative Tiffany Zolkowski introduced a bill for the state to recognize Alaska's 229 federally recognized tribes. House Bill 123 has passed through two committees and is headed for to the House floor for a vote. KYUK's Greg Kim reports on what the bill's supporters say state recognition would mean for Alaska's tribes. The comments you'll hear in the story were drawn from hearings before the Alaska House Committee for Tribal Affairs and an online forum hosted by the Tlingit and Haida Central Council.
In 2017, the state entered its first ever compact with Alaska's tribes through the Alaska Tribal Child Welfare Compact. In 2019, Governor Mike Dunleavy announced plans for a state tribal compact for education. But Representative Tiffany Zulkuski says those and any other potential state and tribal partnerships will be built on a broken foundation.
It's difficult, I believe, for us in the legislature to really talk about expanding the existing relationship with tribes when we have not taken the first formal step in acknowledging the relationship with tribes.
Tribes are sovereign. Zulkuski said that's why many of Alaska's 229 federally recognized tribes were able to enforce travel restrictions in their communities during the COVID-19 pandemic. The federal government has acknowledged this power and status of tribal governments. The state's legislature has not recognized tribes, which is what House Bill 123 is seeking to change. The question central to this bill is, what would be the difference if the state were to recognize Alaska's tribes? Zulkuski and other supporters of the bill say that legally, nothing would change. Here's Liz Medicine Crow, who is Tlingit and Haida and CEO and president at First Alaskans Institute.
It is not something that somehow expands tribal authority or sovereignty. The state doesn't have that authority. That is inherent sovereignty born to us from the very beginning of our creation.
Here's Vivian Corthius, president and CEO of the Association of Village Council Presidents, a consortium of 56 tribes in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta.
By officially recognizing Alaska's tribes, the state of Alaska will not give us a benefit we don't already have. Instead, the state of Alaska will gain a benefit. That benefit is a partner.
And here's Crow again.
The core of the issue is here, can the state learn how to be a good partner with tribes in Alaska? And recognition is a mechanism for that government-to-government relationship to be harnessed and put to good work for all Alaskans.
Richard Chakya Ish Peterson, president of the Central Council Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes, says the state has good reason to seek partnerships with tribes. For one, he says, tribes have access to funding through their relationship with the federal government.
Especially in these times of budget constraints, we save the state of Alaska hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars.
Peterson says the Alaska Tribal Health System alone subsidizes the state with hundreds of millions of dollars per year. And earlier this year, Alaska became the first state in the nation to offer a COVID-19 vaccine to all adults. That was possible in large part due to a vaccination campaign by tribal health organizations partnered with the Federal Indian Health Service. Crow wants the state to join the partnership that tribes have with the federal government, so all three governments can work together on the many issues currently facing Alaskans.
That's three chances to make life better for Alaskans.
Imagine what we could do with education, with transportation, with justice, with public safety, corrections, all of these services.
House Bill 123 has 12 co-sponsors in the House. It has passed through the Tribal Affairs Committee and the State Affairs Committee and appears headed to the House floor for a vote. In Bethel, I'm Greg Kemp.
The U.S. Senate on Thursday blocked quick consideration of a waiver that would have allowed foreign-flagged cruise ships to visit Alaska ports this summer. Federal law requires Alaska-bound foreign-flagged cruise ships to stop in Canada. With Canada's ports closed to cruise ships through next February due to COVID-19 concerns, the 19th Century Passenger Vessels Services Act effectively prevents Alaska's cruise season from going forward. Alaska Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski asked the Senate Thursday to fast-track a short-term waiver of the law for voyages between Washington and Alaska. She said hope for a 2021 season was fading.
Back home right now, people are not talking about the season for 2021 coming up. The motto is get through to 22. That's an awful way to be approaching our situation. And so they have asked for help. They realize that anything that we can do to try to salvage even a few weeks of tourist season is going to be important to us.
She offered an amendment to the waiver bill, dubbed the Alaska Tourism Recovery Act, that would require cruise liners to carry defibrillators, provide passengers with a bill of rights, and ask regulators to draw up new rules for cruise lines to return human remains when a passenger dies at sea. She said the amendment had been negotiated with two Democratic colleagues. But the waiver stalled after Utah Republican Senator Mike Lee objected to the amendment, calling it a, quote, poison pill. Nevertheless, Alaska Republican Senator Dan Sullivan, who co-sponsored the waiver, said he's optimistic about the bill's future.
Here on the Senate floor, despite what you've seen, there's actually been momentum and movement, and I'm confident we can get there.
Federal maritime law is only one barrier to a summer 2021 Alaska cruise season. Orders from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have prevented large cruise ships from sailing from U.S. ports since last March. Sullivan and Florida Republican Senator Rick Scott recently attempted to fast-track a measure to require the CDC to lift cruise ship restrictions by July 4th. But an objection from Washington Democratic Senator Patty Murray, citing safety concerns, blocked easy passage. The CDC on Wednesday told cruise lines that it remains committed to resuming passenger operations by midsummer. An Anchorage woman organized a COVID vaccine clinic, got a painful reminder of the stakes of the pandemic when her sister was hospitalized with COVID-19 shortly before the clinic took place. Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan visited the clinic to see how her story is inspiring a vaccination effort for Alaska's Hmong community.
Just days after Mayor Ramirez Chang finalized the date for a COVID vaccine clinic for Anchorage's Hmong community, she got a call from her sister, Navali.
When she called me from the emergency room and said, hey, I have COVID, they told me that I have COVID. And I knew she wasn't well, but to hear that from her, it just made my heart drop.
At first, she wasn't sure how bad it was. Navali, who's 37 years old, was released from the ER. But a few days later, Ramirez Chang got word from her brother-in-law that things had gotten worse.
I just remember getting a text from my family member saying that she went back to the emergency room. But she has been in there since. Until more recently, she was airlifted out.
Anchorage doctors told her they couldn't do anything more for her, and she was transported to Oregon. Navali's now on a ventilator, and it's not clear whether she'll survive.
We are now asking for, you know, again, just continue praying for my family. Especially for her, because, you know, she's such a nice person.
Her family struggled to decide whether to publicly share their story. They're concerned that attention can make them targets of anti-Asian hate. But she says they eventually decided their story was worth sharing if it could convince more Hmong Alaskans to be vaccinated.
We never want anyone to be in this situation, to have one of their own fighting for their lives, and we want everybody to be as prepared as possible.
Convincing the Hmong community to get a COVID vaccine can be tricky, says Yang Tao, who's volunteering as a translator at the clinic. Part of the difficulty is with language. Tao says it's hard to find Hmong words to articulate the difference between the Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson vaccines, for example. She says an underlying cultural preference for traditional treatment is another issue.
A lot of the Hmong people, they usually get their healings from natural herbs, you know, and the Western medicine has been a huge downfall for the Hmong people since, you know, World War II. So trying to believe in that, it's kind of hard, whether or not they're shamans or Christians.
She's been trying to get accurate information out to Hmong speakers, which she translates for English speakers as well. Here's one message she wants the community to hear, which she translates into English.
To all the Hmong fellows, you know, there is no difference from the flu shot, from the COVID shot, from the polio shot. Just check in with your physician, making sure you check in with your doctor, saying what's best for you.
She and other volunteers and health department employees are doing their best to blast out these sorts of messages. They're live streaming the clinic on Facebook, and they interviewed with influential YouTubers. It's helped get more people signed up for the clinic, many of whom are after the one-dose vaccine.
Okay, and you are here for your first Johnson & Johnson vaccine,
COVID
vaccine. Okay.
The health department added offerings of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine after a last-minute surge in demand at the clinic. But Tao says it's still an uphill battle to convince the Hmong community to get any vaccine.
I see less people getting it. They're still afraid of it.
But organizers aren't giving up. Ramirez Chang says seeing her sister, who's known for her warm and bubbly personality, debilitated by COVID, is a reminder of what's at stake.
It's the hardest thing to see her through FaceTime struggling and grasping for air and being told that she couldn't, that she can't do it on her own and that she needs to be on a ventilator again. So I just don't want that for anyone.
She hopes Thursday's clinic can help others in Anchorage avoid the pain and uncertainty that COVID has caused her own family. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Lex Trinan.
Oil and gas leasing isn't allowed in Ketchikan Bay. The state blocked development there after an oil rig got stuck and leaked oil into the bay in 1976. But legislation proposed by Governor Mike Dunleavy would allow the state to sell subsurface gas-only leases in part of Ketchikan Bay so oil and gas companies could drill into undersea reservoirs from miles away. More broadly, the bill would permit subsurface leasing and drilling where surface drilling is currently prohibited. And the bill's opponents say that would unravel state restrictions meant to protect wildlife. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
Haley Payne, Deputy Director of the Alaska Division of Oil and Gas, told the House Fisheries Committee the point of the legislation is to capture royalties for the state.
The primary benefit of this bill would be increased revenue.
Traditionally, oil and gas companies have reached undersea gas reserves with vertical wells from platforms on the ocean's surface. But recent drilling technology allows companies to tap into reservoirs in the ocean floor from onshore pads miles away. Locally, it's a method Blue Crest Energy already practices to reach offshore oil reservoirs from its Cosmopolitan unit. But the state can't currently profit off subsurface leases in Ketchikan Bay, where leasing is prohibited. The legislation allows for subsurface leasing on a chunk of the bay near Anchor Point. It's adjacent to the Seaview unit, where oil company Hilcorp has prospects. Hilcorp hasn't yet made plans for any subsea expansion there, but the state wants to establish a lease program to collect royalties in the event that they do, says Sean Clifton from the Alaska Division of Oil and Gas.
So we've seen a lot of new lease activity in this area as Hilcorp has been looking for new places to develop gas in order to keep our homes warm and the electricity running.
The area was closed to drilling in the first place, in part because of fears about harming local fish and fishermen. The state says subsurface drilling won't hurt local fisheries and that surface drilling will still be prohibited. But Penelope Haas, a member of the Ketchikan Bay Conservation Society's board, worries activity in the bay could still adversely impact local wildlife.
This lateral drilling technology and the fracking that goes along with it can go 6 miles or more into areas that are currently closed.
Not all directional drilling is fracking, but the two can often go hand in hand. Haas says that brings concerns about large-scale water withdrawals, impact to local watershed, and potential flowback at fracking sites. The state, for its part, says fracking can be done safely and is already practiced in Cook Inlet, with oversight from the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. Haas says she's also concerned about the larger-scale impacts of the legislation.
We, on the second level, are very much concerned about an effort by the administration, by the Dunleavy administration, to rewrite the playbook on areas protected from oil and gas drilling around the state.
Beyond its impact on Ketchikan Bay, the legislation allows for subsurface drilling around the state where surface drilling is restricted. Clifton, with the state, says he doesn't have any other examples in mind of where it might apply. But he says the state wants to be ready in case a situation like the one in Ketchikan Bay arises elsewhere. The legislation is among a slate of bills from the governor's office allowing the Department of Natural Resources to lease and sell land for development. Committees in both the House and Senate are reviewing versions of the bill. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Tomorrow is May Day, an international holiday honoring workers and a mariner's call for help. More after this.
Have fish in the freezer? Have it on the table in minutes with Azmi's new Cook It Frozen and hundreds of other recipes at wildalaskaseafood.com.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
May 1st marks a working-class holiday celebrated since ancient times around the world. May Day originated in pagan Europe as a festive holy day to celebrate the end of winter and the return of the sun and fertility of the soil. Our modern-day version of May Day as a working-class holiday evolved from the struggle for the 8-hour workday. May 1st, 1886, saw national strikes in the United States and Canada for an 8-hour day. Clashes between police and striking workers resulted in many deaths. In Paris in 1889, the International Working Men's Association declared May 1st a holiday to commemorate those who died in their fight for workers' rights. May Day is best known to mariners as an international distress signal.
Mayday, 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 mayday. Fishing vessel coastal rain, fishing vessel coastal rain.
The call sign originated in 1923 by a senior radio officer in London. He needed a word that would easily be understood by French and English-speaking pilots and came up with Mayday from the French Maidare, meaning help me. The Mayday call is always given three times in a row to distinguish it as an actual emergency.
Mayday, 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 9815 Lima, I'm in trouble, Mayday, Mayday, Mayday.
Back to the Mayday holiday, fishermen can lay claim as workers in America's first and oldest industry dating back to the late 1400s. Fishing is our world's only remaining hunter-gatherer industry for a wild food source. The seafood industry is Alaska's largest private employer. Nearly 65% of our nation's wild-caught seafood comes from Alaska. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and what a lovely afternoon it is. It is fair 48 degrees at present in Kodiak. It's time for your Island Messenger. I'd just like to say it, if you get the chance, this would be a lovely day to go and have lunch outdoors. It is so beautiful outside. For the remainder of this afternoon, sunny with a high near 47, a northwest wind around 10 miles per hour with gusts as high as 20 miles per hour. For tonight, mostly clear, with a low around 37, a north wind around 5 miles per hour, becoming calm. For Saturday, a 30% chance of rain after 5 p.m., increasing clouds with a high near 46 and calm wind becoming south around 5 miles per hour in the afternoon. And for Saturday night, rain mainly after 11 p.m., a low around 39, a southeast wind around 15 miles per hour with gusts as high as 20 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 80%, and for Sunday, rain with a high near 44, east wind around 15 miles per hour and gusts as high as 20 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 80%. And for Sunday night, rain with a low around 40, east wind of 15 to 20 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 25 miles per hour, chance of precipitation is 90%. So it looks like today is on its own as a very bright and sunny day, but I'm sure there will be more of them. The days are getting warmer here in Kodiak, and the daylight is getting a lot longer. Today's date is the 30th of April, 2021. It is a Friday. The sun rose today at 6:20 a.m. It will set tonight at 9:56 p.m. and it will rise again tomorrow morning at 6:17 a.m. That's a total of 15 hours and 36 minutes of daylight, with a gain of 4 minutes and 39 seconds. The record high was 62 in 1983. The record low was 27 in 2006 and 2010. For Kodiak District tides, a low tide at 11:18 a.m. of negative 1.88 feet, a high tide at 5:52 p.m. of 7.11 feet, a low tide at 11:03 p.m. of 2.23 feet, a high tide at 5:16 a.m. of 9.72 feet, a low tide at 12:12 p.m. of negative 1.19 feet. For west side tides, a low tide at 11:41 a.m. of negative 3.27 feet, a high tide at 6:07 p.m. of 14.53 feet, a low tide at 11:52 p.m. of 2.16 feet, a high tide at 5:44 a.m. of 15.75 feet, and a low tide at 12:33 p.m. of negative 1.83 feet. Going over to the marine weather, Marmot Island to Sitkin Act today, a northwest wind of 20 knots, seas to 6 feet. Tonight, a southwest wind of 15 knots, seas to 6 feet. Saturday, a south wind of 15 knots, seas to 5 feet. Saturday night, a southeast wind of 20 knots, seas to 5 feet. For Sunday, an east wind of 20 knots, seas to 8 feet. And for Monday, a southwest wind of 25 knots, seas to 11 feet. For the Shelikoff Strait, a small craft advisory today. Today, a west wind of 25 knots, gusts to 40 knots out of western bays and passes through the morning, seas to 5 feet. For tonight, variable wind of 10 knots, seas to 3 feet. Saturday, east wind of 15 knots, seas to 3 feet. Saturday night, an east wind of 20 knots, seas to 6 feet. For Sunday, a northeast wind of 25 knots, seas to 5 feet. And for Monday, a southeast wind of 20 knots, seas to 5 feet. Synopsis for the North Gulf Coast and Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 999 millibar low, 20 nautical miles southeast of Seward, moves to 100 nautical miles east of Middleton Island at 1,004 millibars by Friday night. A front enters the western Gulf of Alaska Saturday afternoon, then moves northeastward across the Gulf through Sunday morning. Getting into a bit of community announcements. For today, the Kodiak Emergency Operations Center has received new COVID-19 case information for the Kodiak Island Borough. 5 new cases have been reported for the Kodiak Island Borough. 1 case is travel-related, 3 cases are close contacts of a previously reported case, and 1 case is community spread. All 5 of these cases were tested yesterday. This brings the current case count associated with the Kodiak Island Borough to 1,118. 8 cases are classified as active locally, and there are no active cases currently hospitalized in Kodiak. To date, there have been 45 local hospitalizations and 5 deaths associated with COVID-19. The DC Electrical for Vessels intro course has been moved to May 7th and 8th, 8 a.m. until 5 p.m. in the Kodiak College Technology Center, Room 101. This is a 12-hour Friday-Saturday workshop for all beginners, women and men who want to learn basic theory and practices of direct current electricity aboard vessels. Practice crimping wires, assemble a circuit of common vessel components, use a multimeter to test your circuit, apply basic safety standards, read and draw an electrical diagram, learn and use the power equation, plus more. If you own a boat or wish you did, if you go fishing, if you'd like to know what makes a float switch work, if you have casual interest in electricity, or if you're exploring the career of marine service technician, this workshop is for you. No testing, just learning. A class fee of $175 applies, and this workshop is appropriate for ages 14 and up. For questions, contact Lorraine Stewart at 907-486-1209 or lestewart@alaska.edu.
Arctic Care 2021 is coming to Kodiak May 5th through May 13th. Arctic Care 2021 is a no-cost healthcare services program provided by the U.S. Department of Defense in partnership with Kodiak Area Native Association. Arctic Care offers no-cost dental, medical, and optometry services to anyone in the Kodiak community. To learn more, including how to schedule an appointment, go to kodiakhealthcare.org or call 486-9870.
Normally this would be where we play Island Byways, but we actually don't have one for you today, so I'll fit in a few more community announcements. There's a call to artists for the Crab Festival Art Show. The Kodiak Arts Council and the Frame Shop invite Kodiak artists to submit new original creative work to be included in the 21st Annual Crab Festival Art Show. The show will accept and feature artwork by Kodiak artists completed within the past 3 years. Eligible media include, but are not limited to, drawing, painting, photography, mixed media, pastels, block and ink print, pottery, sculpture, collage, digital art, metalwork, jewelry design, fiber and textile art, and woodwork. The art show will be staged in person downtown in Fisherman's Hall, right next door to all the fun of the festival. The deadline to register as a participating artist is May 21st of 2021. Complete guidelines and a link to the online submission form can be found at kodiakarts.org or theframeshopak.com. A notice for Kodiak Island Borough meetings. Monday, May the 3rd at 5:30 p.m., there's an assembly chamber at the assembly chambers. Citizens Board of Equalization is meeting. Monday, May the 3rd at 6:30 p.m. in the Borough Conference Room, a Consolidation Committee meeting. Tuesday, May the 4th at 5:30 p.m. in the Women's Bay Fire Hall, Women's Bay Service Area Board regular meeting. Tuesday, May the 4th at 6 p.m., Bayside Fire Hall, a Fire Protection Area No. 1 Board regular meeting. And Thursday, May the 6th at 6:30 p.m. in the Bayside Fire Hall, a Borough Assembly regular meeting. celebrate World Migratory Bird Day on Saturday, May the 8th, 2021. The Kodiak Audubon and the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge will host Dave Dorsey and his snowy owl Ghost virtually on Saturday, May the 8th at noon. Ghost will be present for the first 15 minutes of the Zoom session, so don't be late. Dave will be happy to answer questions after the short presentation. Registration is required. Please visit kodiakaudubon.blogspot.com or our Facebook page for the link to register. This event is organized and sponsored by Kodiak Audubon Society and the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge. For more information, contact Cindy Trussell at 486-2878.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.